Welcome back to the Esquire Q&A podcast. It's not often that you hear of someone successfully lifting 500 kilos in a world record deadlift. The beast, Eddie Hald, shattered records in 2017 and also took home the title of the world's strongest man. The former truck mechanic turned world's strongest man turned now Hollywood actor speaks to Esquire about his grueling training regime, working out with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the difficulty of traveling when you're a big man. Well, thank you so much for being in the Esquire Q&A podcast studio with me today, Mr. Eddie Hall.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
So funny story, we were on the same flight yesterday, coming back from Manchester.
We were indeed. I went to the bar and saw you there guzzling wine. And I thought, yeah, I better get one as well. So,
do you like flying Emirates then?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's one of the best airlines for sure. Yeah.
I mean, because you've recently spoken extensively in the past about airplane seats and how difficult it is for you to fly anywhere. By comparison, are the Emirates business class seats a little better then?
Yeah, it's a bit of a step up from the economy in the UK. Yeah, I usually have to sort of spread my arse across three seats usually. But no, I can manage one seat on it on a business class Emirates flight. So yeah, much better.
Yeah, and it's spacious. And, you know, there's a lounge at the back of the plane that you can stretch your legs at.
That's it.
Yeah. So Dubai... not your first time here. Are you excited to come? Hopefully the temperature's cooled down a bit in the last couple of weeks, so it should be fine now.
I've been in the past and sunburnt myself quite badly. But no, I've been a few times now. Dubai's one of these places. I think every time you come, it gets better. You know, you know where to go and what to do. And obviously, you know, you get to grips with the culture. And it's always been a fantastic place for me. It's really enjoyable to come to Dubai.
Yeah, and so... if you can elaborate for our listeners why exactly you're here.
So I'm here. Last year we did the World's Ultimate Strongman out in the desert. And it was one of these shows where we basically invited the top 10 strongmen in the world to come and battle it out to see who's the strongest, you know, and sort of celebrate sport. We had a number of activities. We had Strongman for Kids. They had BBJ, jiu-jitsu, they had loads of activities going on. And basically, you know, we've invited these guys back this year to compete again and to find out who is the 2019 champion. I feel as though last year was a really big stepping stone. You know, strongman's never been done before out in Dubai. We give people a taste, and obviously people got talking, the reviews were really good, and we couldn't help but put on another show.
Yeah, I mean, last year it was, you know, rave reviews all over, and they really did want you guys to come back this year.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear.
And now you had a very interesting story that I think a lot of people who are your fans, including the people on the plane who were, you know, dying for pictures of you and wanted to get to know you well, all you want to do was get a bit of shut eye.
Yeah.
do you get that a lot? Do you?
Yeah, it's day-to-day life now. I'm a household name in the UK, so... you know, I can't even go to the supermarket and get bread and milk without being hassled for pictures and autographs. It's something that you just get acclimatized to. You know, it's just everyday life now.
But, you know, while sometimes a lot of celebrities find it difficult to have that, you know, invasion of their personal life where they're okay to meet and greet fans in like a public setting, but sometimes they just want time for themselves. Do you feel that sometimes?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I'm out with my family, if I'm out with my wife and kids, I will point blank say no to people, and I'll explain why. You know, I'm with my wife and kids, I'm sorry, this is family time. I'm lucky enough to have, you know, a very good security system on my house, so I don't get people knocking on my house or anything. You know, I've got gates and all that. So, and I suppose just being out and about, I expect it. You know, it's you almost become public property in a way when you become, you know, a sort of a regular on the TV screens, and you've got to accept that, and you've got to accept that people look up to you and people will, you know, give their left arm to meet you, to have a picture with you, to get an autograph. And, you know, I always do my best to sort of give back and give them what they want.
And you started off as a truck mechanic and then went on to win multiple strongman competition, you know, UK strongman, world strongest man, Europe strongest man. I mean, what was the journey like? How did you even get started?
So my journey began when I was a young boy, and I was actually a national champion swimmer. I was on the Great British squad in the Junior Olympics, and I actually suffered with quite a bad spout of mental health in my very early teenage years, and that made me stop swimming. And then my therapy to sort of get out of that black hole was to go to the gym and lift weights. And that stemmed into a very heavy obsession. By the time I was 19, I realized that I was one of the strongest men in the country, looking on Facebook and YouTube. And I thought, hell, you know, I've got to try, you know, I've got to put these amazing skills I have to the test. I did my first strongman contest when I was 19. And I said on the day, put it out on social media, I said, friends and family, I'm going to win the world's strongest man one day. And 10 years later to the day, I did it.
That's pretty cool. Like, so it just started off as an obsession, lifting heavier and heavier weights. Like, how, what is, like, you know, because we've in the past spoken to a couple of other people in the sport, and they've said, you know, sometimes it just becomes an obsession to see if you can lift heavier and heavier objects. Was it the same for you as well?
For me, it was almost a blueprint. I remember watching The World's Strongest Man when I was 5 or 6 years old, and with my parents. And I remember saying to my parents, I'm going to win The World's Strongest Man one day. And, you know, they all laughed at me, brothers laughed at me. And I think subconsciously that stuck with me throughout my entire life. And when I was able to say that goal out loud and mean it when I was 19, I believed it. And I think, you know, that hobby, as you could call it, turned into a career. You know, I worked as a full-time mechanic up until I was 26. I owned a security company, and one day just came and I thought, this is it. Now this is my chance to become the world's strongest man. Quit my job, sold my security business, and 2.5 years later, won the world's strongest man.
That's pretty interesting. Now, do you, when you have family reunions, be like, ha, I told you so, or or do you not pull that one out from your, you know, hat?
No, I don't need to. You know, it's I would never be that person that's sort of spiteful, ha, I told you so, but more of the fact of, I've proved to those people that no matter what, no matter who you are, where you come from, what background, and believe me, I've had a background, you, through hard work and dedication, you can achieve anything in life. And that's the message I wish to portray to the kids of this generation.
And what would you tell people who are hoping to be the next world's strongest man right now? Any piece of advice to them over your, you know, decade long career that you've had so far? Because you've been through ups and downs and ups and downs.
Yes, of course. I would say people have got to learn, you know, getting into the sport, and people have aspirations, of course, is to use the failures as fuel. And a psychiatrist put it to me one day. I'd gone to the world's strongest man a number of times, and, you know, I wasn't happy with my progression. And he said to me, well, but what if I told you that you were only 15 failures away from winning the world's strongest man, and this was your 16th? And I was like, what? And he kind of puts it in perspective that every failure makes you go away, work harder, come back bigger and stronger. So use that. You know, people fail and they, you know, bury their head into a hole and give up, or have a few months off. So my advice would be, never give up, be consistent, and use those failures and the negativity that people throw at you, use that as fuel.
And it's very interesting that you raised the point of mental health, because right now across the sports, you know, across every genre of sport, be it football, rugby, weightlifting, you know, swimming, anything really, everyone is talking about how important their mental health was and the state of their mind when they go on to win a competition or lose a competition or come back from a loss. Was it difficult for you to seek that help, to go to someone and be like, hey, you know, I think I need to take care of my mental health first?
I wouldn't say I went to someone for help with mental health. I did that in my younger years. You know, I went to psychiatrists and I was prescribed all the Prozacs and whatever else when I was a young teenager. I used professionals to use my mental health as a tool, in a way, you know, help to channel it. People use mental health and use it as an excuse as to why they're not doing well in life. I use it as an excuse as to why I am doing well in life. I use mental health as a tool to fill that void. And the only way to fill that void for me was to go to the gym. So every time I went to the gym, I got a feeling of self-worth, you know, euphoria. And because of that, every step I got closer to that world's strongest man meant I trained harder, I ate more, I slept more. And it just became obsessive in that way that I enjoyed filling that void. And I still do. You know, I still train 3-4 hours a day every day. And I probably always will till the day I die.
But that's a very positive way of looking at it. A lot of people take a loss and then, you know, can never sort of muster up the courage to go for round two, round three, round four. You know, what is that switch that keeps you on the positive and the up and up and up?
I suppose for me, myself, when you commit to something that, you know, you don't want to look like the idiot that says, I'm going to do this or do that and then doesn't back it up. That person to me is, you know, that's not a very liked person. And I suppose that's what I get scared of when I set goals, is that I'll make sure when I set a goal that it's achievable, first and foremost. It's not impossible, but a goal that's almost so extreme that it is impossible. And that's what I enjoy. My family keep me motivated in the respect that if I set a goal and don't achieve it, then that's fine. But as long as I keep trying and trying and trying, that's the example that I'm setting towards my kids. And as that's what I kept doing. You know, I kept failing, I kept trying, kept failing, kept trying. And then it paid off. One day I won the world's strongest man and I'm in a great position in life right now. And yeah, it was the failures that made it happen. If it wasn't for the failures, I wouldn't be sat here right now saying, you know, I won the world's strongest man 2017.
And you still have the world record for the world's heaviest deadlift, which is about 500 kilos or half a ton?
On the dot, yeah, 500 kilo, yeah.
What was that feeling like, lifting 500 kilos? Because that, you know, unimaginable to most people that you were able to do that.
Yeah, it was pretty special. Back in 2015, I said I was going to pull half a ton off the floor, and the whole strength industry literally burst out laughing on social media, you know, said it was impossible, said I was an idiot, said I was deluded. Fellow strongmen said that, promoters said that, family members said that, friends said that. And it was deemed impossible. It was deemed, you know, almost as like putting man on Mars almost. And that I couldn't take that. I couldn't take the negativity. I couldn't stand that word impossible. So I went on a mission. I went out there and I pulled the 500 kilo. I worked relentlessly in the gym and outside the gym to make it happen. And I suppose the most fulfilling feeling off the back of that was, not only did I do the impossible, that I proved to people that, you know, through hard work and dedication, you can achieve great things.
So what was your daily training routine like, just to, you know, day in, day out, to be able to lift that weight?
Pretty intense. I mean, to say it was a full-time job would be an understatement. It was two full-time jobs. I'd get up at midnight, eat. I'd get up at 4 a.m., eat. I'd get up at 7 a.m., eat. Back to bed. I'd have like a second breakfast at 9 a.m. I'd go back to bed. I would have physiotherapy at 11 a.m. for an hour and a half. That takes us to lunchtime. I would have steak, chicken, rice, pasta, vegetables for lunch, a huge dessert, and then back to bed. I'd get up about half past three, have a second dinner. Same again, steak, chicken, rice, pasta, vegetables. And then I'd go and train for four or five hours. And after training, I'll go and do an hour's stretching, an hour's hot cold treatment, and then I'd come home, have a huge evening meal, and then I'd climb into a hyperbaric chamber and spend a couple hours in there. And that was my life every single day, Monday to Sunday, 365 days a year. There were no days off, there were no birthdays, no Christmases, no family days out, no meals out, no christenings. It was complete obsessiveness just to get that one lift.
How many times a day did you eat?
Oh, I mean, I couldn't count. I mean, geez, I'd say at least 8, you know, sometimes 10 meals a day.
And you said sleep is important as well.
Yeah.
So how many hours would you sleep in a day?
It'd be sort of broken up, but I think in total, I'd sleep for about 13 hours a day.
Wow.
Because that was just as important as the gym work, you know, getting the rest.
Wow, that's incredible. And what did your family make of you, you know, completely disappearing and putting so much into your training regime?
Very supportive, but also, you know, it put a hell of a lot of strain on the family as well. I've got a wife and two kids. I barely saw them for an hour a week. Never saw my mum and dad, never saw my brothers, never saw my nephews and nieces. So, you know, I basically disappeared off the face of the planet for, you know, a couple of years to achieve my goals, the world's strongest man and the half ton deadlift. It was tough, but I think, you know, in hindsight now, looking back, you know, the family are very pleased they all supported me. And of course, I'm very pleased that they stood by my side as well. And, you know, we're all here now, we're all happy.
So on social media, we put out that we were meeting you today, and we asked them a few questions that they would like to ask you. And one of the funniest ones we got was, bear with me, very cheesy.
There's a bear with
you. Sure, you've heard this before.
Go on. But
do you even lift, bro?
That's a good one. No, never. I just stroll in and pick stuff up.
And I did say, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe like you're going to make me do this. But like, fine, did it, done. So when you were training, how much would you lift every day? Or would you not lift? Or would you just save that for special days?
So on the lead up to big competitions, I would always train to about 90% of your max. And that would be pretty much every single day leading up to a contest. You'd have about maybe 6-7 days off before a contest. But yeah, it was pretty full on.
And you don't live professionally anymore?
No, since I won the World's Strongest Man in 2017, I've retired. I've landed two starring roles in three TV shows. I've got two big movies coming up in the next 2 years. One of them a leading role, and the other two movies are... I can't talk about it, but the big roles, you know, and they're alongside very big movie stars.
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger one of them?
Because
you've been pictured working out and hanging out with the man.
Yeah, you know, all those sort of guys, you know, from the 80s, 90s, I've been spending a little bit of time with them. And yeah, they've been fantastic in sort of getting my foot in the door in Hollywood.
And what's the transition been like then to go from, you know, living in the UK, winning the World's Strongest Man, training relentlessly, and now living the good life over in Hollywood and making the transition into being a potential, you know, big name film star?
Yeah, it's pretty surreal. I mean, I've still got base is still in the UK. You know, I still live in my hometown. My family's still there. So I'm having to do a hell of a lot of commuting. I think last year, out of the 12 months, I was on the road solid for 10 of those. This year, I've been on the road solid for about 7.5. And it's just getting more and more and more. I think eventually it will mean a move to America. But I'm enjoying the journey. And it's a different challenge. You know, I spent 10 years of my life chasing the world's strongest man. And I'll probably spend another 10 years chasing Hollywood. And I'm happy chasing my dream.
And what's it like over there for you, you know, making that transition and how what are the most stark differences really going from the UK to LA?
I mean, just the, you know, the sort of scale of everything. You know, you've done sort of film sets in the UK, but then when you go out there, it's a different level. It's the money's 10 times as much. The production's 10 times as much. It's just so surreal. Until you've actually been on these movie sets and you're with these movie stars, you can't comprehend how weird a feeling it is to be in these things.
And, you know, obviously, given how LA is so into clean eating and vegan food, have you got on that train, that bandwagon yet?
Not yet. I have consciously made a decision to eat less meat, more vegetables, but meat's still on the menu. But compared... When I was training for World's Strongest Man, I was easily eating a sort of a kilo and a half of meat a day. I'd be lucky if I eat half a kilo now. You know, it's really, really sort of cut back a hell of a lot.
And now, now you're in Dubai for about a week, almost a week. What is the main things on your agenda apart from the competition over the weekend?
Obviously see some of the sights, meet some of the nice people. You've got some great things to do here. I think you've got the world's biggest water park, which I fancy going and venturing into. I've got a lot of friends out here. Just a bit of networking. I think most of my time is going to be spent doing PR for this, the Ultimate Strongman weekend. But I'm sure I'll fit a lot of fun things in around it.
Well, it's horse racing season, so hopefully you can fit that in.
The horse racing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's at the hotel, the Maiden, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I'll be sure to check that out. Did they do betting here?
Unfortunately, no.
So it's all outsourced?
It's illegal, so it doesn't exist here at all.
All right, maybe I'll just bet between myself then. There we go.
So you did say that you go through, you know, you're on the road a lot. Does that mean a lot of flights?
Yes. I mean, I've probably acquired a couple hundred thousand air miles this last year.
So do you make it a point to always fly business then because of the seats?
I have to. It's the fact of, you know, my health more than anything. I need to get a good night's sleep on the plane. If I didn't, then, you know, I'd be a zombie. You know, if every flight was in economy and you didn't sleep, you do a bit of flying yourself. I saw you on the plane this morning. How would you feel today if you hadn't been in business class and not slept your way through it? You wouldn't be feeling very good, would you?
I think we take for granted the perks of the travel.
Definitely. We do for sure. Yeah. But I feel as though I could never go back down to the economy, you know, lifestyle.
But do you think they just don't make planes for you at all? Like it's just uncomfortable.
No, they don't. You know, I'm just under 400 pounds in body weight, and yeah, it's I can't fit in normal seats, you know. And even if I buy two seats, that means I've got a belt buckle in my butt cheeks, or, you know, I've got someone, an armrest sticking in my side. It's impossible. So yeah, but I have to go business class, or I refuse to travel, basically.
And that's what you do usually when you fly from LA back home to see your wife and kids, and then back to LA.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But then again, you know, perks of a movie star.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, that's you get into these levels of your career, and yeah.
So now, you did say it was top secret, but we have to ask. Can you give us a few hints about the LA projects you're working on?
No, I absolutely cannot, because it would jeopardize my contracts.
So you have signed an NDA then?
Yeah, I can't say anything.
Wow, that's very interesting and exciting, and makes us even more interested to find out what exactly you're working on in secret in Hollywood.
Yeah, well, just have to wait till it comes onto the screens, I suppose. That's the way it works most of the time.
Do you know when the possible release date is?
Not a clue.
No,
none whatsoever. Don't even know when the filming starts, so.
Okay, so that's cool. So you're just pre-production then?
Yes.
So lots of hints already dropped that we've gotten from you through conversation. But thank you so much for for coming down to the Esquire offices and joining us on this very special podcast.
No, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
That's all from us this week. Stay tuned for more next week. We will be back. And don't forget to hit subscribe on that button below.